Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Giles Corran Has No Idea. It's called this not because I literally know nothing, but because it's all about the moment in the week when I have to sit down and write my column but have absolutely no idea what to write it about, which is where my wife Esther comes in, who, having read all the papers whilst I take the kids to school, always has half a dozen ideas picked out for me when I get back to be discussed at the kitchen table over a nice cup of coffee.
My idea for you this week is so brilliant that we can all just go home because it's so great.
You have one.
But it's so great.
Is it really?
It is.
This would be lovely. I would love one that I could just simply write. The ones where they go, it writes itself.
It writes itself. Pride and Pamplona.
The lesser known, really shit Jane Austen novel where they all go to Spain.
Alas, no. No, it's not. It's about experience tourism.
So you've given this column a title.
What?
Pride, they don't normally have titles. You're calling this Pride and Pamplona. That's the name of your idea.
Yes, I was just sort of trying to introduce it to you. But
and you mean Pride, which happened like easily 10 days ago and it's no longer of interest
to
anyone.
Yes, but it is sort of experience tourism season, what with Pride and Pamplona and that festival with the tomatoes where they throw the tomatoes at each other.
Is that already? What? That seems like it's every week, that
I
one.
I know,
the one,
yes,
where they have the picture of all those Spaniards surrounded by tomatoes. Easily confused with Pamplona, which is all the blood from the tourists who get gored. Never Spaniards, always Americans.
Well, exactly.
Sorry, so you're saying people go on holiday in order to go to Pride marches?
Well, I think so, because I was listening to a podcast the other day about Pride and about how members of the LGBTQ plus community are not that crazy about the commercialization of Pride.
My Instagram feed was so full of Pride, and like some of them were gay, but mostly it's straight people taking photos of themselves with a bit of rainbow painted on their cheekbone, and then
I'm sure lots and lots of the gay community out there, they're thrilled by this. It means, you know, gay culture is mainstream and that's kind of what they're after, and it's all great. But lots of people are really unhappy about the commercialization of Pride. Big companies who don't really have very good equality policies. And then there was all that stuff about Pamplona.
The stuff about Pamplona, which is the running of the bulls,
yes.
And what there was lots of gorings this year, as opposed to lots of goerings this year, which would be a very different kind of Nazi Pamplona bull running thing. Which
would
be fun. You could just imagine, wait a minute, sorry, now I have to go to Pamplona dressed as Hermann Goering.
Yes.
And then they can say the tragic goering of Goering.
Terrible goering.
The terrible goering. No, the tragical goering of Goering. Nobody's caring about the goring of Goering. No, so look, yeah, and about, I think there was...
Do you know what? It wasn't anything actually that specific about Pamplona or Pride. It just got me thinking about experience tourism. And I wondered if you could do a little bit of a kneecapping of bucket list wankers. People who don't really have a personality. They're not very fun. They're not very interesting. But they've run with the bulls in Pamplona and they've been to Pride and they've done the tomato throwing in Spain. So it makes them interesting. Meanwhile, they are flying all over the world... causing terrible damage and going to Pride without really sort of knowing what it means or the relevance or don't know what the Stonewall riots were.
But this
were
is,
anything.
You're getting into a wider question of, it's really what I would call a travel wanker. It's the notion, people say travel broadens the mind when really it's not true. In fact, the only thing more boring than a boring person is a boring person who's just come back from somewhere else to tell you about it. So really what you want boring people to do is to fucking stay at home.
Yeah.
Not do anything except watch telly because then they feel they just have to shut up.
That's exactly.
Whereas when you, the people who travel the world, when I was at school, my housemaster at school, was a very widely travelled, incredibly boring man. And he sort of went rock climbing in the Alps and glacial climbing in Alaska. And he'd been everywhere. And he told me that I should go travelling to make myself more interesting. Mm. And I just thought, all I could possibly do is make myself more boring, because a boring person with travel anecdotes, it's the most boring thing in the world. And that's now all been slightly pushed onto Instagram and you can just not look at them. But the idea that you can make yourself into a... by being
That's even worse doing traveling around the world on your stupid bucket list in order to stick it on Instagram.
So
leaving rubbish
everywhere. What does this column look like then?
I don't know. You're the joke monkey, not me. I'm just giving you the idea. I'm giving you this brilliant idea of having a go at the one small section of society you have not had a go at yet, which is bucket list idiots.
Is that a thing with Pamplona and Pride? Isn't that more to do with going up Machu Picchu and that sort of thing?
No, but this just gave me the idea.
Right.
But it's going up Machu Picchu, it's going to see the Northern Lights, now it's all Arctic and everyone wants to go to the Arctic and see glaciers
while
it's still there. Go and see the glaciers while they still haven't melted yet. But then no, it was actually nothing specifically to do with Pride or Pamplona. That just gave me the idea. I thought it was a brilliant idea. So nonplussed.
No, I'm not looking nonplussed. I'm just sort of looking down at these excellent ideas I've had.
All right, well, give us one of yours.
It's not necessarily that. No, it's fine. I do bash travel people quite a lot, which comes from slightly...
You haven't bashed travel people for ages, actually.
What's the sort of... We should keep a sort of time thing. Who have I bashed more recently than travel people? I bashed everybody last week, didn't I? So, yeah. Yes, I mean, I can see that. It does obviously come from a place of jealousy. It comes from a place of I'm not being very good at travelling. I mean, I went interrailing when I was 18 with Alex Goulden. Maybe I was 17 and we just left school and everyone had been interrailing and they went off for this month and it's amazing. They travelled everywhere and I didn't really have any mates. So I went with Alex Goulden, who I knew from getting the number 13 bus to school, and that was about as far as I'd ever travelled. And we got our interrail cards for 140 quid and we got on the train to go down to Dover to get on the ferry, and in the compartment somebody travelling the other way had left two bottles of whiskey and 200 Winston and 200 Marlboro Lights.
What?
In the compartment. And I thought, this is it. This means that now was the time for Alex and Jiley to travel Europe. Woohoo! And I said this to Alex and he said, I've given up smoking and I don't want to drink because my mother says that we could get into trouble. I went, wait, we're setting off from cloistered North London, two little Jewish boys from private school, and we're going to Europe and we're not going to smoke or drink, because I thought that was the whole point. Mm. And now here's our fags and here is our booze. And that was the point. Alex had given those things up. I go, well, look, first off, at least we'll go to Amsterdam and smoke some weed. I promised my mother I wouldn't do that.
What?
You promised your mother? What else is there? The only other thing left is girls, and we're both far too afraid of them to do anything about that, especially if we're not drunk or stoned.
Yeah.
So we went interrailing, and the first thing we did was go to Amsterdam, and we got a sort of bunk in one of those, canal boat things with like 10 Ukrainian builders on a whoring holiday.
Oh,
and us, these two little Jewish boys with like maths homework sitting in there. And he wouldn't smoke dope. So I went and like quite scaredly bought like a 16th of sticky hash, which just made me miserable and paranoid, smoked it, which I already was, smoked it on my own. And then we left. Then we went down to Nice. We thought, we'll go and eat some food. We went to Nice. And on the way, what happened was every time we went to look for a hostel to stay in, because we had £200 for the month, which was all right then, Alex had developed, he had a test. We were getting this little Jewish boy, you could imagine sort of Woody Allen. I mean, he's wonderful and funny and brilliant bloke, and I've not seen him since, but he's a great guy. So we would get into our hostel. Yeah, we found somewhere. It's only £7 a night, and we get in. Alex had a torch with him, and he said the test for bed bugs, okay, so you turn all the lights out in the room, then you shine your torch on the bed, and you rip out the sheet to see if there are bed bugs crawling around.
Right.
And this was what you say. And he said, "Look, there's no bed bugs here." I go, "No, but what about all the smack addicts lying on the floor?" should be your prime concern, you know? And that was what it, so we then thought, right, now we'll go to France. We know France. We can speak a bit of French and we can eat really well. We went to three different restaurants and we were both too scared to speak to them. So we went to McDonald's.
What?
And we had Le Big Mac. This was before Pulp Fiction. We had this hilarious conversation about Le Big Mac and Le Royale with cheese. And then we came home. 9 days after we set off.
No.
Well, 10 days after we set off.
The plan was to be away.
My dad literally, what are you doing here? I thought, and that was it. That was my interrailing.
Oh my God. I've got to say though, from what I know of you, darling, it doesn't really
sound. Now that remains the most adventurous thing I've ever done. So yes, so a column about all that, that would come from a place of envy and misery that I'm too scared to travel.
But you know what it is, darling? I think you're just too interesting to go travelling.
I think so. I just stay home and read and just, you know.
You can come up with a dramatic story just going down to the post office.
That was quite a dramatic story about going to... Oh, speaking of which, by the way, dramatic
what?
Story. Here's a dramatic story talking about travelling. So okay. I went to Scotland.
You did?
In the WH Smiths.
Yeah.
We went to just buy sort of magazines and comics to read on the way. And there was a member of staff at... what station would I have been at? Euston. Berating this little old lady saying, you can't leave your suitcase there, it's getting in everyone's way. And she was saying, well, it's a wheelie suitcase and I have to leave it there because I can't wheel it around. I just want to, you know, buy some magazines. Well, you can't leave it there.
Because people might think it's a bomb.
Or something.
Yeah.
It was Shirley Williams.
No way.
It was Baroness Shirley, Dame Shirley Williams.
Herself,
the leading member of the Gang of Four, the founder of the SDP, the leading light of... So I said, don't worry, Dame Shirley, I will look after your bag. And so I held Shirley Williams' bag while she picked some magazines.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really funny. Did she know who you were?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think she did.
What did she say? Was she nice?
She was incredibly nice, which is how I know she can't have known who I was. She can't have known that I was Murdoch Poodle, right-wing lapdog,
no,
stooge, Corran.
To someone like Shirley Williams, you are just...
No, she's a super educated, brilliant, amazing woman, and she would just think I'm a... arsehole you might as well ignore. But I was just very, very polite, and she was pleased to be recognised, and it was great.
Yeah.
And I introduced her to Kitty.
Oh, good.
And I said, Kitty, this is Shirley Williams. And I had this briefing. I hope it is Shirley Williams. I said, wait, it's just a famous old lady. It could be Edna Everidge, he says, desperately trying to think of, you know, some other famous old lady. I also started, is it Dame Shirley? Is it Baroness? Is it Lady Williams?
I'm sure she doesn't care.
I'm sure she probably... I was just very excited. And then I asked if we could do a selfie, and she said yes, and Kitty said no.
Right.
So I've got no selfie of Kitty with her. But we had a conversation about politics. I told Shirley Williams the story of how on the referendum day I let Kitty have my vote.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm not sure that's legal. I said, no, but that's okay because Kitty voted Remain. She said, oh, well, that's okay then. And the story of how I let Kitty vote in the most recent elections.
Yes.
And how she voted for the Women's Equality Party.
Yes.
And Shirley Williams said, that's probably a very good idea.
It very much sounds like Shirley, I'm reading between the lines, she sounds like she was desperate to get rid of me.
Yeah, it's true. Shirley Williams was backing away. I think she
towards the member of staff saying,
Actually,
that man won't leave me alone.
Yeah.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Shirley Williams leads me into a story which I thought would be possibly worth doing.
Yeah,
okay. Shirley Williams, when I was a kid, and it was very exciting to see Shirley Williams because she's old and not dangerous anymore. When I was a little public school boy, and Shirley Williams was the, I believe, Secretary of State for Education in the Callaghan government,
she
I think.
Really,
or if not, she was definitely the shadow Secretary for Education in the early Thatcher years.
She really wants to get rid of
the massive abolish public schools thing,
which
was terrifying to a public school boy because we were all going to have to go to Grange Hill, where they called where they said flippin' Eck Tucker and had fights and stuff and didn't do their homework. And like, I thought Grange Hill literally was filmed on Mars. I didn't know that there was actual places where the kids, without disrespectful.
Yeah.
And anyway, so there was a story in...
It's in the Times.
Is it in the Times?
It's in the Times.
The one about...
It's today. It's about the...
It's about Ed Miliband finally having found a use for himself.
Oh, sorry, I've got it down.
You've got it over there. What Ed Miliband is up to now is trying to abolish public schools. The headline says it's the Abolish Eton Appeal. Ed Miliband, the former Labour leader, has thrown his support behind a campaign to outlaw private schools under the social media banner, because that's what's important, Abolish Eton. Labour against private schools is pushing the party to commit to removing fee-charging schools privileges, which probably means VAT exemption, that kind of thing, and integrating them into the state system. And this is problematic for me because... And for you. I mean, you were educated both in the state and the private sector.
I was.
Obviously, he's right. I am one of those people who thinks that, yes, if there weren't private schools, the state education system would undoubtedly become better.
our kids are in the private system only because we couldn't find spaces for them in the state system. But what is interesting to me is that while Miliband is ranting on about how they dominate the upper echelons of society, huge implications for social mobility and inequality, it's all terrible. The story above it is Chinese buy up more of England's private schools, okay? So the Chinese are buying at an alarming rate, a £150 million purchase of Cats Colleges. They bought St. Bee's, a 430-year-old independent school in Cumbria. It's been bought by the Chinese. Ipswich High School for Girls sold to the Ipswich Education Limited, which is backed by the Chinese Wanda Group. Chinese are buying private schools.
Why?
Okay?
Why?
Because private schools are great. And the Chinese want their population, their vast, enormous population, to be really well-educated. We're talking about...
And the Chinese obviously love English private schools because they turn out totally identical people.
Yes.
They're all the same. They're all the same. Westminster's are all the same.
Because China being basically a dictatorship wants that.
Yes.
The private education system. So that's the column, isn't it? The private education system, which was set up basically to police an empire. You needed 10 million wonks in suits to go
and... And they all had to be identical so that you could send them to wherever, to India, to Africa, to wherever.
Yeah.
And they would think the same things and dress the same way, and they would just disseminate the message of the British Empire.
But in the educational sense, so that this... Our great education system, which Ed Miliband, this sort of soft Labour patsy from Hampstead, thinks have to be abolished, they are being bought up by the biggest and most successful communist country that the world has ever seen. It's 1.3 billion people. They have the biggest, fastest growing economy. They have the biggest military. And they want private schools.
They want English public schools. They don't want private schools. They want English public schools. I think there's
so perhaps so maybe he's wrong. So the idea is that we're all beating ourselves up so much about having these private schools. Meanwhile, the most powerful country in the world is going to buy them up. It also leads to that the interesting thing your friend Max told me about. Anyway, these schools which exist, which the Labour Against Private Schools want to abolish. They're not really saying equality in English society because there aren't really any English people at them anymore. The people...
Far fewer.
English people can't afford to go to these schools. So at schools like Eton and Winchester and Westminster, they are now predominantly Chinese, Russian, South Asian, Gulf.
Yeah.
To the extent that Eton has had to set up a bursary to help old Etonians send their kids to Eton because the Russians...
Russians show up.
Yeah,
there's an actual
Etonian. Russians, I am not sent Pavel to Eton to him. It's to sit around with other children of other oligarchs. I don't want to meet other Russians. Yeah. I want him to meet Prince of Wales.
Exactly.
And so they're having to pay English toffs to go to Eton so that the Russians and the Chinese come. This basically means that the Labour can do whatever they want to abolish these schools, but in the end, Russia and China are going to buy them all, and they're going to bus in English toffs.
Yeah.
And they will need people like our children to show up.
They want our children.
Possibly not our children.
They need Prince George and Archie, whatever he's called.
So basically,
they need them to go.
So the future of English public schools is Chinese ownership.
Is in the hands of Chinese. Yeah.
Maybe it was in. Was it? Was it yesterday?
No, it wasn't. It was this morning.
You're trying to remember. There we were in bed.
Is this Wednesday? Is it? Where's Wednesday?
That's how you know it's not a filthy story.
Yes.
There we were in bed, doing what all couples do in the morning.
Darling, could you just move your phone in the cup?
Reading the paper. Some people commenting on the podcast said they liked the authentic sound of newspaper turning.
I thought they would.
Sounds so real, doesn't it? It's amazing.
Let's carry on and talk about Wimbledon.
The thing about, yes, so there's two things about Wimbledon. Serena and Andy playing together, pictures of them in all the papers, talking with their hands over their mouth.
This is because
So we've got these images everywhere of them consulting on court, very close together, with their hands over their mouths, presumably so that they can't, that what they're saying can't be read by lip readers.
It can't be, I thought lip readers, but it must be that they're worried that their opponents...
We can't be their opponents. Because what is their tactic? It's Annie, when the ball comes over, hit it back. And when they hit it back, I'll hit it back. And then you hit it and I'll hit it. And then if it's on the left, I'm
right
over there.
Back.
And I go, oh, no, Serena, I think a better plan will be if we all both rush forward at the same time and like smash the fuck out of it. And then the opposition will know what to do.
If I want you to hit the ball, I will say yours.
Well, Serena, I think it's, I think that's, yeah. You see, it doesn't actually, no, but they're covered. Footballers do it. They cover their hands because they don't want. It's because they don't want the lip readers on the TV to see what they're doing. Are they just saying, "I'll see you later for a Big Mac"? There's something self-aggrandizing about the sight of a pair of tennis grunts feeling they have to cover their mouths like spies in the Cold War.
Yes. Yes. What could they be saying that is even remotely interesting or being picked up by anyone, even their opponents? Their opponents know they're just going to hit the ball as hard as they can back over the net. I mean, are there tennis tactics?
Yeah.
What could they be?
Andy, you hit the ball, then I'll hit the ball, then he'll hit the ball, then it also may sound like I'm feeling a bit resentful about the tennis. I feel a little bit left out. Everyone's having this lovely time. The Meghan's there being a bit of a precious queen.
Well, we did go. We were invited, but then...
We weren't invited this year.
Well, I think maybe you didn't send a nice enough thank you note. Because the fact is that it was nice of them to invite us, but we didn't really enjoy it. And it was quite odd.
What do you mean?
Well, we didn't really enjoy it, darling. I mean, we got there and it's really, really, really far away.
We've been to the men's semis. Like,
yeah, I know.
I suppose it's a
men's bit... Men's semis. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's only just a good...
Yeah. The men's quarters when they're slightly less excited.
That's very funny. I never noticed that before. Okay, so it was really, really far away. It was quite hot.
The thing it is.
It's big. You have to... I mean, you have to schlep around everywhere. We've gone as normal punters and we've gone as sort of...
We've never been to Wimbledon as normal punters.
I have been to Wimbledon as a normal punter and actually... It was, I don't know, there's just a lot of walking around and it's just hot and overcrowded and a bit uncomfortable and you can't really...
The time we were invited to the men's semis and do you remember it was Federer again or Djokovic or somebody, this is how much I give a shit.
Exactly.
And we went there, first of all, the best bit about it is the lunch and you go to the lunch beforehand and they give you, and Tim Henman comes and talks to you and
but don't you remember, in our hospitality suite, we had Jimmy Carr, Steve Coogan, Rob Brydon, and then actual Tim Henman.
Well, actual Tim Henman
came in to give us a speech.
He gets paid £1 million to do 5 minutes in each tent going, I was a bit shit, wasn't I?
No, but and it doesn't matter because we had in our tent all these people. How appealing was it to go and watch the tennis?
No, this was the thing. I was sitting there literally between... The thing about Jimmy Carr and Rob Brydon, Jimmy and Rob, if I may, they fucking perform. I mean, they're just really, really,
always,
really, really funny.
They are not those comedians who don't want to give it away for free. They will give it away. They just sit there and tell
so
jokes.
So you're just sitting there in the tent, you know, and 300 yards away, some boring American
clock.
You're sitting there with free Verve Clicquot, big bowls of strawberries, and, you know, Rob Brydon and Coogan and Jimmy Carr giving it chat. The impasse, get up and go and get the tennis.
Zero.
Yeah, and then you get there, and we got there, and it was sort of... Murray was on next, wasn't it? The first match was going on, and we had to get back to do childcare.
And we looked at our watches and went, if we go now, we can beat the crowd. Watch it on telly.
And Murray was coming through to be like he was going to be the second time he'd ever been in a final if he won this match.
Yeah.
It was his biggest day in the history of English tennis, apart from the time he won for 100 years. I'm thinking, we've got to get to South Shields Station. You've got those shoes on. Yeah. We're going to have to plod down the road, 40 minutes back. And, so I guess I didn't say thank you, so they never had us back.
They didn't have us back. Although, I also think that I'm possibly unrelaxed at large sporting events, particularly at Wimbledon, because I can't help rubbernecking for famous people. And I can't concentrate on the tennis because I think maybe I've seen Carol Vorderman. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's one of the things. There's this other fuss about the Duchess of Sussex. Is that her real name? Meghan.
Yeah.
In the box being taken photos of. What does she think? What does she think she's there to do?
That's the only thing I thought, and that was the thing. Whether you could write about that, because you don't want to be too mean, because everyone's piling in on Meghan because she arrived in jeans and all that, and so she couldn't go in the royal box. The only thing is that Meghan, her security people have tried to stop people taking photos of her, and you do ask yourself, wait a minute, why do you think they give you the free tickets?
Yeah.
It's not because they think she really wants to watch the tennis. It's because going to Wimbledon is about watching Cliff Richard sing while it's raining, possible sighting of Carol Vorderman, booing David Cameron, there's the Duchess of Sussex.
Well, exactly. But can you get a column out of it?
Probably not.
No. Okay,
nor can I get a column. Move on. So this story, I think, might work as something. So two hospitals have opened shops selling e-cigarettes as part of an anti-smoking drive. It's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, we live very close to a massive hospital, the Royal Free, and it's... people standing out, I mean, people standing outside on drips.
With their drips.
Smoking. Yeah. And it just, it's such a sort of signal that smoking isn't good for you.
Yes.
That hospitals are basically full of people who have to go outside and smoke.
Yeah.
Almost all of them are in there because of their smoking related thing. So anyway, great, stamp out smoking. Smoking is evil. But then they want to encourage people to vape. And and sell them. So basically, the only thing worse than smoking is vaping.
Well, the social implications of vaping are so weird, because you can be talking to someone at a party and you think you're getting on fine and everything, and then they suddenly, they sort of reach into their pocket or into their bag and they sort of go, and then they keep on talking to you. And you just think, sorry, do you want me to leave or something? Would you, you just get the impression that they would rather that you would just fuck off so they could be alone with their vape. And it's like their mind is somewhere else.
In the people that we know, they basically all gave up smoking, people of our age. And now they've all started vaping, but they didn't use the vapes to get off the fags. They've just all started vaping because vaping has become fashionable. And vaping is so uncool. Okay, the cool thing about cigarettes is that they kill you and you don't give a fuck.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, that's the whole point. So you're a sort of, you're Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca. I stick my neck out for nobody.
Easy Rider.
Yeah, exactly. You're Easy Rider. You are Clint. You're the man with no name in the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. You don't get smoking's going to kill you when you're 70. You don't care. You're never going to grow old. Whether you're sort of Sid Vicious and Nancy smoking your tabs and everything. It's the one thing that is now. Oh, we've got this thing that you can suck in your lips, which is just like your mummy's nipple, but it doesn't kill you. Mm. And now they all do it. Little sort of gurgle, and it smells of good. Breeze, you sad fucker. And they just do it all the time. They don't do it a bit like with a fag. They do it all, they hold it, and they
people who vape, it's just constant, but sort of random. They just sort of go, you know,
and they go,
sorry, what were you saying?
Yeah, I know.
It's and like they've got a bag of sweeties in their bag and they're just sort of eating a sweetie every now and again.
And not offering you one. No one says, oh, do you want to go on my vape?
No, of course they won't. But
they're
not bad people, but it's just very, socially, it's just very weird.
The NHS should not be encouraging it. We don't know that it doesn't cause cancer. It's just, as you said, when you're talking to someone and they pull the thing out of their pocket, it's as if while you're talking, all they've been thinking about is when can I reach my vape? When can I get it? Can I get it? And our friends who are mostly rich, let's face it, have little sort of elegant ones that look like tampons, and they're little tiny little silver bullets.
They look like tampons. They look like pieces of jewellery.
But I was visiting my friend Robin,
who
hasn't got a pot to piss in and you know, lives on 2 book reviews a year and tax credits, and he's got a vaping machine that looks like a bog roll he found in a bin. It's just a dented big, but he goes as he's driving, and it's like, it's got nothing elegant about it at all. And he's going, oh, Johnny, I've got to stop this thing about. and also we're driving along. He's giving us a lift to the station out in Castle Douglas. I mean, the cleverest, funniest, best man that I know used to really enjoy his fag.
Yeah.
He's got this vape the size of a dustbin, and he's driving along constantly, and he can't even see the road for this giant dented sort of black PVC thing. And I kind of think, would a good present to buy? Should I buy Robin one of those little sort of silver pens that our millionaire friends have for vaping in them? The kind of social hierarchizing of all that thing. And at every level, it's just the vanity of it is worse than the cigarette.
Well, no, because I was sitting next to a very famous woman at a dinner party the other night, and she had this really cute vape. I mean, it was, and she's very cool and nice and funny. But she famously never ever smoked cigarettes when she was younger, and now she started vaping. And she said, "Do you want to have some of my vape?" And I went, "Yeah, why not?" It nearly fucking took my head off. I mean, she went, "I warn you, it's really strong." And I was, it was like a dragon breathing directly into my face. And I looked at her and I thought, I want to do that. I want to do that. I want that little vape with a little wicked face on it.
So the upshot of this is that you're going to...
100%. After this is finished, I'm going to the nearest vape shop.
Gorillas are party animals just like us. Now, this brings us to the story that producer Ben, being but a young thing, was hoping we would talk about the dancing cockatoo.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny picture, but it's not anything to talk about, is it?
I don't know. But 10 years ago, it was a massive internet meme even before the internet existed.
Dancing cockatoos.
Yeah, and now they think it's a major actual thing because it tells us that dancing is innate and it's not just a thing that humans do. And the Times have followed it up brilliantly with gorillas dancing.
Yeah.
And gorillas don't just dance, gorillas go to festivals.
What?
Yeah, which we knew. Because who do you think those people at Glastonbury are? In my mind, they're not people. They are just monkeys.
Well, people might not know what a problem you've got with dancing.
I think they probably don't. But this is a thing about how gorillas from different tribes, or whatever you call them in gorilla communities, come together, like when a particular tree is doing lots and lots of fruit, which they all know is going to happen, doing lots and lots of fruit. I'm not a botanist. And they get there, and they all dance, and they're sort of dancing around.
Wait, hang on a second. They ram themselves full of sugar and then dance.
Yeah, no, but they
like
go
a
to
toddler's
they go to play, they go to places where they know that like every 4 years the trees do a particularly abundant fruit drop. They yeah. all get they all go there. I mean, they have to keep refreshing online and to make sure they get their tickets.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
They all go there and they wear special Hansa Welly boots with Panama hats. Therefore, underlining my feeling that people who like dancing are no better than animals. People who go to parties and festivals,
yeah.
that is just the absolute lowest of the low. And all my life, I've just never, ever, ever danced, never danced a step in my life because I feel that I'm sophisticated, which this only proves that basically, if you like dancing, if you're one of those people that, oh, I'll have a couple of drinks, Charles, you'll have a dance. No, I won't, fuck off. Because dancing is for morons. And it's like when I see people at Glastonbury and they're all sort of doing this pointy yeah. thing and dancing, it makes me think of the Nuremberg rallies. If you can get the kind of people that you can get all doing the same thing over and over again with some person on the stage, that is the one way ticket to dictatorship
yeah.
and genocide. And the fact that we have finally established that dancing is no more a part of the human than basically flying or climbing trees and being naked, this proves that I am the most advanced form of human. The non-dancer is the only civilized person. Me and Gore Vidal, basically.
I'm sure there are gorillas who don't like dancing as well. They just sulk under a tree.
This is the gorillas who don't like dancing.
Yeah.
That is where the Korans evolved from.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That is the missing link between things. If you all you have to do, show me the gorilla that doesn't like dancing, I will show you my great-grandpa Harry.
Actually, you're...
You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with Giles Corran and Esther Walker. It's a Times podcast produced by Ben Mitchell. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to avoid ever missing an episode. And if you want to find out what I wrote about in the end, there's a link to my column in the podcast description.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.